In the summer of 1933, a middle-aged couple took a long-awaited vacation up the Maine coast. They took a light blue Buick Roadster along bumpy dirt roads. They visited farms and churches. They read each other poetry in the evening. They were entirely unremarkable, except that this was First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt and her companion, Lorena Hickok. Eleanor and Hick shared a friendship and a romance that changed both of their lives.
Lorena Hickok was absolutely a crucial person who helped her to figure out how to be a first lady.
This is Commonwealth Journal, and I'm your host, Anna Fisher Pinkert. Next, we'll talk with Susan Quinn, author of Eleanor and Hick, The Love Affair That Shaped a First Lady, a new book that tells the story of these two remarkable women.
Hick said once, "My problem is that you've become a personage as well as a person, and I admire the personage, but I love the person. And the personage means I can't love the person as much as I'd like."
That's all ahead on Commonwealth Journal, produced at WUMB with support from UMass Boston. Susan Quinn is the author of several books, including Marie Curie, A Life. She is the former chair of Penn New England, and though she originally hails from Ohio, she now resides in the Boston area. Her new book, Eleanor and Hick, The Love Affair That Shaped a First Lady, is on bookshelves now. And I am going to confess right off the bat that I am an Eleanor Roosevelt nerd, so I could not be more excited to welcome Sue to Commonwealth Journal. Thank you for joining me today.
It's my pleasure.
Your book, Eleanor and Hick, chronicles the relationship between Eleanor Roosevelt and Lorena Hickok. We all know who Eleanor was, the niece of one president, the wife of another president, a human rights activist. Who was Lorena Hickok?
Lorena Hickok was a top AP reporter at a time when there were very, very few women doing serious news. Women were confined for the most part to the women's page. Hick climbed up to the top and reported on major events like the Lindbergh kidnapping. And she was assigned to cover Eleanor Roosevelt in 1932.
Hick becomes Eleanor's friend, her companion, and in many ways more of a partner to her than Eleanor's husband Franklin could be. And there have been innumerable biographies of Eleanor Roosevelt, and more recently the surviving letters between Eleanor and Hick were published. So what inspired you to tell the story of these two women?
The letters have been available, actually, since 1978, for a very long time. And actually, there was a book written shortly after they came out by Doris Faber, which told the story, but told the story without the romance, really played down the passionate part. She was very, very disturbed by the idea that Eleanor Roosevelt might have had a love affair with a woman. Times have changed a lot since then, and it seemed really a great opportunity to go back and revisit that story and tell it in a different way, really celebrate these two women who really were so important to each other. And especially at this critical time in Eleanor's life, Lorena Hickok was absolutely a crucial person who helped her to figure out how to be a first lady.
Some of the letters between the two of them were destroyed. Is that right?
Lorena had charge of the letters. Hick, everyone called her Hick. And Eleanor gave her side of the correspondence because Hick was planning to write a biography. She did write a quite charming memoir, hardly a biography, after Eleanor died. But anyway, Eleanor gave her both sides of the correspondence. So after Eleanor died, Hick decided to give the letters, both sides, to the Franklin Roosevelt Library, but she did eliminate quite a few of the more passionate ones, as she told Eleanor's daughter Anna, "Your mother was not very discreet." But still, there's plenty in the letters to indicate that for at least 5 or 6 years, this was a love affair.
And you also cite outside people, their friends, their acquaintances, their colleagues, who seem to have understood their relationship as something more than friendship.
Yes. There were many life partners among Eleanor's friends. A lot of the women involved in politics, and particularly in the Democratic Party in the early years, were life partners, including the two women with whom Eleanor founded Valkill. So there were all these women around her who were part of life relationships, so it wasn't so surprising that she and Hick would get together.
How did Hick and Eleanor describe their own relationship? Would they have used the term lesbian?
I didn't find that word anywhere. Their friends did call themselves life partners, and there were many indications that they were. Of course, they lived together. They had books that were shared, you know, with book labels that had both names. There was a lot of that kind of thing, but nobody used the word lesbian. But nonetheless, these relationships were clearly life commitments.
Mm.
And when Eleanor asked any of these couples to the White House for dinner, she always asked both women. She considered them, treated them as couples.
Despite all this, there must have been limitations for two women who were partnered together in the 1930s. Can you describe what that was like for women who were partnered with other women?
I loved your introduction about the two of them going off on the road trip. Yes, there were. And being alone together was very difficult. It was difficult for any two women to be alone together in an intimate way, and especially for Eleanor Roosevelt, who was so much of a public figure. So these road trips were one of the rare opportunities they had to be alone together. And Hick particularly treasured them all her life. And they were important to Eleanor, too, but increasingly difficult because Eleanor became more and more of a public figure, thanks in large part to Hick and Hick's advice about how to be a public figure.
So when and how did these two women meet?
Well, Hick was assigned to cover Eleanor in 1932. So all through the campaign, she followed Eleanor everywhere, and Hick was a very hard-working, passionate reporter, so she pretty much became her shadow. So they traveled on the train together all over and spent hours and hours together. And Eleanor, who had been very afraid of the press and been taught by her upper-class family not to have anything to do with the press, became more and more trusting of Hick. And slowly, the two of them revealed to each other that they had both had these very difficult childhoods, very, very different. Hick grew up in little railroad towns in South Dakota, extremely poor. Her mother died when she was 13, and her father was physically abusive, kicked her out of the house. So she worked as a maid starting at 14, barely made it through high school, tried college but couldn't manage it, but managed to become the successful reporter. So Eleanor was a very empathic person in general, but she really warmed to Hick's story. And Eleanor, who had lost both her parents very young and been raised by this Victorian grandma and been told from early on that she was an ugly duckling who would never make it in society because of her homeliness. So she suffered and was a terribly lonely childhood. So as they shared more and more of these stories, they got closer and closer. And Eleanor came to trust Hick in a way she'd never trusted any journalist before. And that slowly became something more than a professional relationship. And Hick began to know more and more. And there were lots of secrets in the Roosevelt family, not just about FDR's paralysis, mm-hmm. which the press never covered, but also about children. Anna, her daughter, was in the middle of a divorce that was a secret. And there were other secrets about drinking. Eleanor's brother was an alcoholic, as had been her father. So Hick began to know more and more and more, and it made her job as a reporter more and more difficult because her bosses were putting pressure on her to tell.
Mm-hmm.
And her loyalty to Eleanor meant that she couldn't. In the end, she decided to leave the AP because of this.
And this was a hard-won position for her. And you really get into the mindset that she must have had at the time about giving up a career that was impossibly difficult for a woman to have in the 1930s.
She'd worked so hard, and she said at one point later on that was reporting was the only job I was really good at. She left it behind for love. She did get a job afterwards working for the Roosevelt administration and doing some of the same things. The WPA boss, Harry Hopkins, sent her out on the road to report on conditions, and she wrote really wonderful reports that have since been published. She was an excellent writer, and also long, long letters to Eleanor describing conditions on the ground. And that became really important to decision-making in the Roosevelt administration because FDR read a lot of her reports, often spoke of specific incidents that she had described. So she became, in many ways, the eyes and ears of the Roosevelt administration. nonetheless, I think Heck never got over leaving the AP and regretted that all her life, probably.
The writing she did for the Roosevelt administration, traveling throughout the country, visiting the areas hardest hit by the Great Depression, those are some very vivid passages that she writes about. Can you talk a bit about what she was doing and how her particular background as someone who grew up in poverty had an influence on these very privileged, wealthy people who were inhabiting the White House?
Hick and Eleanor were very, very different personalities. Eleanor was very contained, very ladylike, although she felt things deeply. Hick was explosive, indignant, full of passion. So when she saw poverty, particularly children who didn't have enough to eat, who were sleeping in rags, you know, who had purple feet because it was so cold and they had no shoes, in places like the West Virginia coal mines, she wrote about it very vividly. And Eleanor, back in Washington, tried to do something about it. She even sometimes came and met Hick a few times in the early days. Just as an example, Hick was in West Virginia and describing conditions there, and Eleanor decided to hop in her car on her own. This would never happen now without any Secret Service, and drive down there and meet her in these impoverished coal mine communities in West Virginia. And because of what she saw, she started this homestead program, which was an important program in the Roosevelt administration, much criticized, but really life-saving for the families who were part of it. Homesteads all over the country, new houses that were built for people like these coal miners who were living in terrible conditions. The first of them was called Arthurdale, and it was in West Virginia. I actually visited there. And beautiful, modest homes with lots of land around them and little places for gardens in each. A very wonderful place, which, as one inhabitant said, was like going to heaven after what she'd lived in before. And that all grew out of Hick's being on the ground and Eleanor's coming, seeing that, and then moving in the way that only she could to make changes.
It's interesting because I've often heard the phrase eyes and ears of the administration ascribed to Eleanor.
Yes.
There's the story that Franklin, you know, not being able to get out of his chair, sent Eleanor. And it sounds like from your story that Hick is really the missing link here, that she went first. She scouted and Eleanor followed.
Well, I think Eleanor was more the eyes and ears during the years that FDR was governor in New York. I think she could move more freely then. But once she became first lady, that became very difficult. And so in some ways they traded jobs. She became the eyes and ears, as Eleanor had been earlier. She learned from Eleanor about doing that and, you know, how careful you had to be to ask the right questions and to make sure to look in the soup pot and see there was actually decent looking soup in there, you know, and that kind of detail work that Eleanor had done and that Hick learned to do. Of course, she was a reporter, so that helped. So she took over that job. Eleanor, more and more, was the one who was writing. You know, she wrote all these memoirs, and then she also wrote this column, My Day, about which began as her as letters to Hick. Once again, it was her relationship with Hick which really sparked that. So she, in the beginning, would write these tedious diary entries to Hick. I did this, and then I met with this one, and then I had lunch with this one, blah, blah, blah. And that turned into My Day, which is this very kind of very detailed, not particularly exciting report that she wrote 6 days a week for her entire life. And it became this amazing documentation of the First Lady's life. And, of course, it introduced her to America and to the world and really established her as this unique person. So she became the one who was doing the writing. Hick had been the writer and was really a better writer, truth be said. Hick became the one out on the road being the eyes and ears. And that continued, really, for the rest of their lives.
Wow. One thing that you said earlier about Eleanor Roosevelt getting in the car and jetting off without the press following, you said that that's an impossible situation to imagine today, and there are so many stories in this book in which I could not fathom a sitting president's wife being able to travel as freely, move around the country, go on vacation with her lover, and do all of these things. And yet, Eleanor complains at every turn, and Hick complains at every turn, about the press following them. Yeah. So were the rules just different at the time? Or how do we credit this freedom that the Roosevelts had, particularly around Eleanor's relationship to Hick and Franklin's disability, which was never discussed in the press?
It's really such a different time. I was thinking a little bit about what it would be like if Eleanor were First Lady now, or as Hillary has been. You know, she and Hillary share a number of things, including having husbands who were unfaithful. As FDR starting with this affair in 1918, was always either flirting with other women or maybe having sexual relations. We don't really know. But that was all not covered by the press, as it definitely would be now. And Eleanor's reactions would be covered, too. You know, Hillary's criticized because she supposedly was hard on these women. Eleanor did the kind of opposite thing. I think she would be criticized because she kind of passively allowed these things to happen and stayed in a marriage, which was really a loveless marriage. You know, she might be accused of just staying in the marriage because of her own ambitions, as Hillary has been. So, you know, there's no way that any of this could happen now. I actually don't think FDR could even be a candidate now, because he would be, there would be pictures of him being lifted into his car and with his arms and legs dangling, you know, and you just can imagine the kind of ridicule of that. And the whole thing, there was, the press colluded in this. They agreed not to photograph Roosevelt when these things were happening, and they also, I think, thanks largely to Hick, Eleanor became such a darling of the press. Hick advised Eleanor to have these all-women press conferences. So that meant that there had to be, that news organizations had to hire women, for one thing, to cover Eleanor. And then Eleanor, these women became really her champions, as she said, which, of course, is not exactly what journalists are supposed to be, but they definitely were her champions. She would have these little gatherings with the women press corps, and she'd hand out candied fruit, you know, and she would send gifts to the babies and knit things for them. So it was very, very chummy, and they were very supportive of Eleanor. And there was no way, and they certainly knew about the relationship with Hick, but there was no way that they were going to out it in any way.
Why not?
Well, I don't think they had the language for it, you know. I don't think they knew how to talk about it. I mean, there were a few sort of nasty critics on the right who did a lot of innuendo. Mm. And Hick would sometimes be described in Time magazine as being mannish, you know, or a news hawk or that kind of thing. So there was a subtext. But it never went beyond that. I think everyone was just sort of, I don't know, too restrained to get turn politics in that direction, to go low as we do now, for sure.
It's very interesting because obviously Franklin Roosevelt had a remarkable presidency. Eleanor had a remarkable political career after his death and her involvement with the UN. And I wonder whether we have gained something by getting more insight into the personal lives of the people we elect, or whether we've lost something in having to have our politicians spend so much time and effort hiding their indiscretions from the press.
Yes, I think we have lost something, you know, because everyone is clamoring about how we should be concentrating on the issues, but nobody can now. You know, I mean, that last debate was a perfect example. You know, there was almost no substance. Because we had to talk about, the video. I agree we have lost something, but there's no turning back. There's no way to not have all of this be out in the open. But I think it limits us. As I say, I think maybe FDR was probably one of our three greatest presidents might not have been able to be president even. We have lost something. I agree.
One thing that comes up again and again in this story is that Hick could not stand to share Eleanor with anyone else, or even with the world at large, which is a big problem if the love of your life is the First Lady. Can you talk a little bit about Hick's mindset? Because I think one of the things that you do so well is talk about the way in which these two women understood their place in the world and their place with each other.
Hick said once, "My problem is that you've become a personage as well as a person. And I admire the personage, but I love the person. And the personage means I can't love the person as much as I'd like." So Hick always wanted, we had this idea of the two of them going off and living in a little cottage somewhere. And definitely Eleanor was the love of her life. Eleanor increasingly became loved by the world. So she was surrounded all the time by other adoring people. She also, because of who she was and how she was brought up, felt a strong obligation to meet all kinds of people's needs. So there was rarely a time when Hick had her to herself. And that was very hard for Hick. And there was a point at which it seemed like it might end the relationship altogether. And Hick, I think, realized that and sort of pulled back and went on one of her investigative journeys that lasted for several months. And when she came back, she somehow had reined in this need of hers to have Eleanor all to herself and kind of accepted that she was one of many.
It does seem at times that their relationship was quite tumultuous. There are a lot of letters that seem very dark, both Hick's need for Eleanor and in many ways Eleanor's need for the type of love and affection that Hick could provide seems to really consume them in a lot of ways that reading them, I often was thinking, oh, this doesn't seem very healthy.
Yeah, or happy.
Right.
Yeah, Eleanor said at one point, you and I are going to find that we have wonderful times together, but even during those times, there'll be parts of them that where we can't get along. So it was never easy between them. I think for Eleanor, having someone she could confide in completely openly was what made it so special. She, you know, Hick was this woman who'd never married, had no children, came from tremendous poverty, no pedigree whatsoever, and yet, ironically, she was the one that Eleanor chose to confide in, and I think that it was critical for her. And she, at times, she'll write to Hick and say, you know, I blow off to you, but never to Franklin, you know. Hick was her escape valve. She would write Hick, I'm on my verge of tears condition. She often felt that when she had to play the role of Mrs. R next to Franklin and pretend that everything was wonderful and happy when it wasn't. Hick's need was just more global. You know, she wanted Eleanor and she loved her all her life. She had a love relationship with another woman before she met Eleanor and then afterwards for a few years with a federal judge who adored her. But I think Hick just never could quite settle for anyone but Eleanor. So increasingly she was on the sidelines cheering Eleanor on as life went on.
And during the period that the Roosevelts were in the White House, she actually lived in the White House, which again, an arrangement that seems impossible to imagine today.
Yeah. Well, the Roosevelt White House was an amazing place. There were all kinds of people coming and going and living there, including Harry Hopkins and Louis Howe, who had been FDR's advisor from early on and was there until he died. They were loyal to people and they loved having lots of people around. So they're often were people staying over. But Hick was pretty much in permanent residence. She had a little room, had been a servant's room, just right across from where Eleanor slept. And sometimes when Eleanor came in late, she would come and sit on the end of Hick's bed and they would talk. And I think for both of them, it was very
a very important important thing that Hick was there.
It seems to me, and by this point, Eleanor and Franklin had an arrangement essentially where she had her circle of support and her activities and he had his. And it seems in some ways, Franklin doesn't play into the book quite as much because it's really about these two women, but it seems that to me that neither one of them could have achieved what they achieved without this frankly unusual relationship for its time, where they set off to be the people they were going to be in a really independent way, in a way that most women who are married in the 1930s wouldn't have been able to do.
They were a team, for sure. And Eleanor was always, she was the one who reminded him of his of his moral obligations. He was the politician often, you know, for instance, on the whole issue of lynching. She was very much wanted him to support an anti-lynching bill. He was reluctant to do it because he needed the support of those Southern congressmen and senators. So that was the push-pull all the time, and she was always pushing him in the direction of what was right. And he would blow up and resent it, but he listened to her, and she influenced policy in really important ways, I think. You're right. They went on these, they even talked about the White House as having two sides. There was his side and there was her side, you know, and they proceeded in tandem, but always the influences were going back and forth between them.
When I read some of the passages from Eleanor and Hick's letters, they feel very modern. These are two women, and they're talking about their love for each other, but in between they're talking about their careers, their friendships, and things that, are still of concern for women. And I think that career in particular is something that not a lot of women have the opportunity to pursue as a matter of, in the passionate way that they both did. So reading it as a modern woman, what have you learned from these two?
I love the fact that they can be a romantic in one paragraph, and then suddenly they're talking about children pulling beets in the beet farms of the West, and talking about the political strategies, about, for instance, My Day columns, and Eleanor's always being asked this question, which we no longer ask, about whether it's right for a woman, a married woman, to have a job.
Right.
And she gets all these letters from women, critical letters, pleading letters, and is it all right for a woman to have a job? And she believes that it is, and she suggests that even if you don't need to make money, which of course she didn't, you know, there's fulfillment in work. And she and Hick go back and forth talking about all of these things with each other in a way that feminists much later struggled with these same ideas. So they were groundbreaking in that they took themselves seriously, and they felt that they had something to say about policy and about government, all the things that we admire Hillary Clinton for now.
Susan Quinn is the author of Eleanor and Hick, The Love Affair That Shaped a First Lady. Sue, I want to thank you so much for joining us on Commonwealth Journal. The book is really enjoyable to read.
Oh, thank you so much, Anna.
Commonwealth Journal is a weekly production of WUMB FM Radio at the University of Massachusetts Boston. Support for this program is provided by UMass Boston, Boston's public research university. Our production engineer is Dave Palmatier. Our executive producer is Patty Domeniconi. You can find us on the web at commonwealthjournal.org. I'm Anna Fisher Pinkert. Tune in next week for another conversation on Commonwealth Journal.